Hello, and welcome to the Second Act Podcast, providing insights and information to help you move forward with the next phase of your career. Please join your host, executive and leadership coach, Andrea Briscoe, here at the secondactpodcast.com.
Hi, all. It's me, Andrea, and I'm super excited to bring into the podcast once again my interview with Marshall Goldsmith. He is a writer, coach, fellow Buddhist, and I get to consider him a friend. So without further ado, here is my interview with Marshall on the Second Act Podcast, coming to you in about 5 seconds. Stick around.
I am really super pleased to have Marshall Goldsmith joining me again here on the Second Act Podcast. You guys have listened to him before, and he's going to talk to us about his latest book, which is How Women Rise, the other work that he's doing in the space of coaching and moving people forward. So, Marshall, thank you so much for being here.
Oh, thank you so much for inviting me.
Yeah, it's great to have you here. So tell me a little bit about the How Women Rise book that you've recently kind of co-authored here with Sally Eggleston.
Well, I wrote a very famous book called What Got You Here Won't Get You There that sold about 1.5 million copies. And then upon reflection, a friend of ours pointed out that, you know, most of that, really the issues in that book were more revolving around issues that men had more than women. And he sent an email to Sally Helgeson and I and said, why don't you guys combine work together and then write a book like that, only talk about more of the unique and special issues faced by women. So that led to the idea of the book. Sally's been a great friend of mine for 25 years. She's the world's expert on women and leadership. She called me up and said, would you like to do that? I said, that'd be fun. So we worked together on it. The project has been a big, big success. Book has sold very, very well, and it's got great reviews.
Oh, great. Great. And so I think what would be sort of, you know, if you were speaking generally to an audience, what do you think would be kind of the top three takeaways? I mean, folks should read the book, certainly, but what are some things or maybe even a better question, Marshall, is what do women and men do differently around leadership, do you think?
Well, I'm often asked that question, and the average woman gets better feedback on 360 feedback than the average man. That doesn't mean every woman gets better scores than every man. It just means statistically, the average woman gets better 360-degree feedback as a leader than the average man. The average woman has one issue to deal with consistently and almost amazingly more than the average man. Women are harder on themselves than men. And one coaching I have with women much more than men is please don't be too hard on yourself. Women tend to be self-critical and too hard on themselves. A couple of other issues in the book. One is women are more hesitant for self-promotion. Again, same sort of theme. They're too hard on themselves, and they don't really present themselves as being as great as they actually are. They tend to downplay themselves too much. And related to that, it's kind of this myth of my good work should speak for itself, which if you really think about it is nonsense. If that were true, no company would need a marketing function. So women are a little more hesitant about self-promotion, about marketing than men are. So those are a couple of issues. One that came out in the book that Sally taught to me, which I didn't know, but I really found fascinating, is the concept of don't sacrifice your career for your job. Many women become so focused on doing a great job, they don't make a long-term investment in their career. And they get focused on taking a job where they're doing about 95% quality, trying to make that into 99, which takes twice as much time, as opposed to saying, the extra amount of time might I be better served if I focused on my career, developing relationships, of learning new things that propel me up to the next level, as opposed to just being the world's expert at where I am. So those are a couple of the major themes that came out of the book. And it's, as I say, been very well received. What I'm happy about the book is it's got no negative political feedback from the left or the right, which is unusual in today's environment. I think it's in the book, we don't make a value judgment. We're not saying women should try to have higher levels of position and authority. We're saying there's not too many women have these jobs right now. And I think it might be good if more did. And if you would like to, I say you should, but if you would like to, we think these are some strategies that can help you.
Okay. And, you know, another part of it that folks that I talk to, women that I talk to, talk about being stuck, you know, and you talk in the book about sort of the idea of a path that obstacles are self-imposed obstacles.
Right. Because we don't spend time on things that you can't control or may not be able to control. The book is really focused on the areas you can control and how you can get unstuck, how you can sit there and work through these things and realize, you know, what do I want to do? And I think just an important breakthrough for women is to say, yeah, I think this company would be better if I had more power. Power tends to be a word that women tend to view more negatively than men. But if you look at power, power is defined as influence potential. That is your potential to influence the world. Well, if more women had more power, I think the world might be a better place. And power is influence potential. If you want to make a positive difference in the world, you need to get more power. And we're not saying you should. If you would like to, though, if you'd like to get promoted, get more levels of power and authority in organizations, there's some things that hold you back, and there's some things you can do.
And also, I guess, what about the idea of, you know, it follows your previous book, kind of what got you here won't get you there. So it's sort of, what else do I need to do, right? Are there behavioral changes? You know, because I keep doing the same thing, I'll probably still continue to get the same result.
Right. And so what we do is we talk about 12 different habits in the book that tend to hold women back. And then for each one, we talk about ways to get around that. For example, in terms of self-promotion, women tend to push back and say, well, I don't want to be like that blowhard down the hall. Well, we say, no, you don't have to do that. That's not even effective self-promotion. That's ineffective self-promotion. But what you need to do is let people know what you're doing right. Sally has a great example in the book. A woman goes in, one of her women executives that she's coaching, she comes in and talks to the boss, and the boss says, well, you know, you're doing a great job here, and here you're doing a poor job of networking. Well, she's very distraught and angry and feels like she's ready to quit the company. But then she realized her boss didn't follow her around, didn't know she was doing networking. So she started just documenting the networking she was doing and just sending a quick email to her boss every month. Well, what she found out is not only was he not upset by that, he was happy. He said, you're doing a great job. I really didn't know this. Thank you so much for sharing it. Well, his problem wasn't lack of empathy or maliciousness. His problem was ignorance. He just didn't know what she was doing and had no reason to understand that she was really doing a great job, especially when the men around were promoting themselves and pointing out the great job they were doing, and she wasn't. So just by sharing that information, she became much, 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 much more respected in the company and ended up being promoted. So that was one good example Sally uses in the book. Don't be hesitant to let people know what you're doing.
And Marshall, do you feel like there's a split between sort of the millennials who have a different idea of what they're able to achieve, and I'm speaking in broad generalizations, versus folks who've been in the world of work for a longer period of time? Did you see that?
Yes, I do. And I think some of that is a function of culture and time. Also, a lot of that is a function of age. I mean, people make generalizations about my generation, but you know, they seem to forget I was a communist hippie when I was young. So, you know, people change. And, you know, it's easy to say, well, you know, the millennials are lazy and all that. I don't really believe that's true at all. I think that people as people aren't that different. They're a different age and were brought up in a different culture. And the reality is, after 3 or 4 years at work, just like anyone else, you know, they have to support a family. They have to pay the mortgage. They get serious about working just like everybody else does. So I think part of that is just a function of age as much as anything else. And also, unfortunately, of unreal expectations that come from college, where you're brought up in kind of a fantasy world that, you know, in life you can kind of journey through and do whatever you feel like and everything's going to be okay, then that's not the real world.
Mm. Okay, good. So Marshall, what is, staying with kind of the more junior folks or people who are just really building their careers, whether it's that they're at the beginning of that path or if they're in the middle and are making a choice to move in a different direction, are there things that you feel like people should be thinking about as they chart that path?
Yes. Peter Drucker taught me a wonderful, wonderful lesson, which I'm going to share with your listeners right now. And it's one of those lessons, if you don't learn anything else but this, it's been a good phone call. First, our mission in life is to make a positive difference, not to prove we're smart and not to prove we're right. We all get so lost in proving we're right and being correct, we forget that's not what we're here for. We're going to make a positive difference. Learning point number two, every decision in life, as we discussed, is made by the person who has the power to make the decision. Make peace with that. Not the best person or the smartest person or even the right person. Decisions are made based on one and only one variable, power. Whoever has the power decision is going to make the decision. That's the way life works. And number three is the decision maker is the customer. So if you need to influence someone, they have the power to make the decision. They're a customer. You're a salesperson. You have to learn to sell what you can sell, change what you can change, and make peace with what you can't sell, make peace with what you can't change. And really, I think an important quality for people early in their careers is develop sales skills, because you're always selling. You're selling ideas. You're selling yourself. You're selling concepts. And very important to realize this is your job, even though you may have a technical job. If you can't promote your concepts and sell your concepts, ultimately, you're not going to make a big influence in the organization. So to make a positive difference in the world, you need to realize I need to influence decision makers, especially when I'm young in my career or in the middle of my career. I need to influence decision makers. I need to understand these people are my customers, and I need to learn how to sell.
So a lot of times we're the brand that we need to figure out how to kind of market that through on different levels.
Exactly right.
Okay. That's great. That's great information. And, you know, what do you think also is, or dealing with, you know, I think that everybody experiences fear, but, you know, there's the kind of face the fear and do it anyway. But a lot of people that I speak to in coaching are, when it comes down to like you peel the layers off the onion as to what's keeping them stuck, is the fear of what I have versus the unknown. So any thoughts around that?
Yeah, I think the thoughts around that are figure out who you want to be and be willing to set some high career targets and then make that a key focus. Women are much more likely to bunker down, try to do a great job where they are, and lose sight of where they want to ultimately go. Also, women are much more likely than men to fall in love with their work team. So what that means is they may not take the lateral move. They may not take even the promotion by saying, well, I don't feel I can leave my team now. Whereas men are much more likely to say, yeah, okay, I'm going to leave my team now. It might not be wonderful for them or as good as it could be. On the other hand, if I'm going to make a big positive difference in the world down the road, I need to be willing to move. So not getting wrapped up again in a job or where you are right now, but keeping that focus on where do you want to go? What is ultimately the end result for you? What is the biggest positive difference you can possibly make in the world? And keep focused on that big picture, not just get focused on, well, I'm going to do a good job where I am. The ultimate nightmare is your boss gives you stuff to do. You do a great job. In recognition, you get more stuff to do. You do a great job. You get more stuff to do. You keep doing a great job. Then you become, if you're not careful, something called indispensable, which means you never get promoted. Why? You just stuck where you are.
Right. Interesting. So, Marshall, people who followed your career and your coaching know about your one, your affiliation, I think, or following of Buddhism and Buddhist practices. And the other one is the way in which, you know, if somebody isn't successful, then the whole fee thing that goes away. So were there times where you didn't have success as well?
Of course. I haven't succeeded all the time. And I've learned the major variable of success in coaching is not the coach. The major variable of success in coaching is the client. So as a coach, my key to success is great clients. I mean, the client I spent the least amount of time with improved most. The client I spent the most amount of time with didn't improve at all. They didn't get paid. So I talked to the client who I spent the least amount of time with. He taught me some wonderful lessons in life. His name is Alan Mulally. He was CEO of Ford, CEO of the year in the United States. And Alan said, look, your whole job is customer selection. You get customers that are dedicated, hardworking, caring people. They can take this coaching process seriously. You're always going to win. You get clients that don't care. You're never going to win. And he was so right. The biggest challenge I see for training coaches, and I've trained thousands, including myself, by the way, is the ego of the coach. we tend to make it way too much about ourselves. Who am I? What am I doing? Me. As opposed to really saying, look, the key to success here is great, hardworking clients that care and try. And if you have those clients, the coaching process will probably be a huge success. First thing I tell everyone I coach is, I don't get paid because I'm a good coach. I don't get paid if you don't get better. I don't get paid because I'm a good coach. I get paid because you're a great client. Don't make it about me. Because the second the client makes everything about the coach, it's just a coach critique. They're not trying to improve. They're just sitting there judging the coach. Well, that's interesting, but who cares? Let's say I'm the best coach in the world and my clients don't get better. Who cares? Let's say I'm the worst coach in the world and my clients do get better. Who cares? The key is not being a good coach. The key is having great clients and those clients getting better.
And so how do you determine what a great client is? Is it someone who really understands what the coaching relationship is about?
They need to have, our coaching process, they need to have three key variables. Number one, they need to have the courage to look in the mirror. And some people don't. They have to have the courage to really do introspection, look in the mirror, and face the reality of their own lives. Number two, they have to have humility to admit they can improve. So if someone's perfect, there's very little I can do to help them get better since they're already perfect. So they need to have some humility. And then three, they need to have the discipline to do the day-to-day hard work required to improve. So courage, humility, and discipline are the three key factors.
Great. Well, Marshall, what are you going to be doing next?
Well, I'm in the process. I don't know if you've been reading about this. Is I went to a program called Design the Life You Love. And in the program, the woman, Aisha Bursell, put it on. She's one of the world's top 15 designers. She said, who are your heroes? Well, my heroes were these kind and generous people who had given me so much. And she said, you should be more like them. So I decided I'm going to have adopt 15 people, teach them everything I know for free. And when they get old, they have to do the same thing, pay it forward. So I made a little selfie video, put it on LinkedIn. Turned out to be the most widely viewed video in the history of LinkedIn. I had over 16,000 people apply. I've ended up now with a group called 100 Coaches. So if you just do a Google search for 100, the number, space, coaches, you'll see it. And the 100 Coaches, now I'm up to about 120 or 30 total. Just an amazing group of people. And the whole concept is there's no money involved. It's all free. And no guilt, no expectation, no money. It's just a community of people trying to help each other. It's just been spectacular. And I have wonderful members like the president of the World Bank, the head of the Rockefeller Foundation, again, former CEO of the Girl Scouts, the CEO of the Mayo Clinic, the dean of Harvard Medical School, you know, on and on and on. Just amazing, amazing people. So it's been a lot of fun. And also one of our new members is Chris Cuomo, the news guy.
Oh, really? That's great. Yeah. And what happens in that group? What happens in that cohort, for example?
Oh, it's just a wonderful experience. My friend Alan Mulally spends about 6 hours with the group talking about his leadership philosophy. Everyone goes to the World Bank and gets to meet Dr. Jim Kim, the president of the World Bank. We just did a session in Silicon Valley for 4 days where they got to talk to the founders of Pinterest, people from Google, Tesla, all kinds of interesting people in the Silicon Valley. We're going to do one in Utah where Gail Miller is going to be our host. She's the owner of Utah Jazz. And it's just been a wonderful kind of community of people. And the philosophy is very positive. It's all based on pay it forward and help each other.
That's wonderful. And that's where kind of that idea around Buddhism comes in, I think, Marshall, in your life, right? The whole idea of kind of what you're putting out there back to serve you.
Yeah, give back. And all my materials are for free anyway. I give away all my materials. So if you go online, my website, marshallgoldsmith.com, everything's free. You can copy, share, download. I have 200-something articles, 200-something videos, hundreds of articles. And it's all free. Somebody's looked at one of the videos, you know, 3 or 4 million times, and articles probably tens of millions.
Okay. Well, I thank you so much for your time this morning. I'm happy you're on the East Coast and able to talk to me.
So, thank you very much for asking me.
Yeah, it's a pleasure. Thank you so much, Marshall.
Okay, bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Second Act Podcast with your host, Andrea Briscoe. Please join us again soon on iTunes and at thesecondactpodcast.com.